already on the lesson from a few minutes ago, and I hope that today we can have the start of a good thing, and plan on being here if you can for each service in the meeting. That means so much to the preacher, I know to the leadership of the church here, to know that you're going to come back and be with us consistently. And it's not that long a frame, just a few, 3 or 4 days, and hope you will come back and be with us tonight and then throughout Wednesday evening. So great to see so many old friends, and I'm not underlining old there, just former friends or previous friends or whatever, familiar friends, that's what I want to say, and to make new friends, you know. We had a fellow over in the, and I'm going to keep this very relaxed today, and if you have anything you want to speak up and say during the comments I make today, you just go right ahead, I'll shut up, and you talk. I've been married a long time, I'm used to that, and she's not here today, she'll be down. She'll be here Tuesday and Wednesday, so I've got to get it in now while I can. But we had a fellow over in Monroe County, Ohio, and his name was Hud McGee. He was a single black man, and he was in his 60s when I first met him. He's been gone now for a number of years. He and his two sisters, they were also unmarried, and they lived together, the three of them, and they were such precious, precious people, very faithful Christians. And Hud was known for his friends. He just had so many, many friends. And one time in our conversation, I said, Hud, how is it you have so many friends? And he very kindly, as he always did, said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, I make as many new friends as I can every day. And he said, I make it a point to keep all my old friends too. So that's the combination I think we all need to think about. Keep the old ones and make some new ones. And hopefully what we'll say here today in this class will help us to accomplish that as well. But we appreciate your support so far. We ask you to come back for the remainder of the meeting. Gary mentioned a while ago that I also entertain on the stage, and that's been such a joy for me because I've met so many wonderful people in the entertainment business, as well as many friends who just show up for the shows. You know, many of you come, and we appreciate you coming up to the Ohio Valley Opry when you can. And I've been doing the comedy for them now for about 11 years, and it's been a lot of fun. And this past month, we had Georgette Jones, George and Tammy Wynott's daughter. And in December, we're going to have John Connolly. I'm from the old school, you know, and rose-colored glasses. And so I'll get to meet him and make friendship there, too. But I've made a lot of wonderful friendships through that relationship with the Clark family. But I'm not here to talk about them today. I'm here to talk about how we can maintain a good atmosphere and a good growing disposition in regard to our relationships. It's all about relationships. You know, we're not going to take anything from this world with us. We all accumulate so much stuff and in this world, but we're not going to take anything with us from this world. It's just stuff, you know. My wife and I found that out recently. We built a new home in Tyler County back in 2005. And last year we sold the lease rights to the Marcellus Shale people and Terra Oil or Gas Company. And we thought, well, maybe it'll be something for the kids or the grandkids down the road a ways, you know. Well, that was about December. And just about 6 or 8 weeks ago, they knocked on our door and said, we have come to take your house. We are going to explore this area. We're going to put 8 to 12 new wells right behind your house. Not on my farm, but they have to go through my farm to get to the other guy's farm. So I call it God's little acre now. Can you understand that? And so the house is gone, and we have gone back to full-time RV living, and we're having a blast. So we have no complaints of that. So don't come to me later and say, oh, I'm sorry you lost your house. I don't care. It's just a house. It was full of stuff. I mean, it was full of stuff. And most of it was hers. Now, the girl, that's a different situation, you know. But, you know, we do have a lot of stuff, don't we? And so we're homeless right now. But we're enjoying it nonetheless. I talked to a guy up at the Opry about a month ago, and he said, you know, I'm going to start dating these homeless women. I said, really? He said, yeah, because if it doesn't work out, so I can just drop them off anywhere. So I guess that would be one way to look at it, maybe. I don't know. But hey, back several years ago, Nina and I were traveling, and I stopped in to a store, and I made a purchase there. of something that I think will be a help to us in our brief study today. I have a lot of fans. Now that sounds like I'm bragging, doesn't it? But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about these. I've got several of these, and I've collected them through the years. And this is an oldie here, I'll tell you. This came from the Dowden McClure Funeral Home up in Marietta. And I don't know what year it was printed, but the phone number of the funeral home at that time was 71. That's it, 71. Terry, I remember when I lived in Pennsboro, that my phone number at Pennsboro was 21. And there was a live person on the other end all the time. We'd pick it up, and she'd say, number, please, and I'd say, 57. And she'd plug 21 into 57, and we'd talk, you know. But anyhow, I collected this one because on the back of it, there's some great advice. You know, they usually print a little message on the back. And this is one of those things. And you can hardly see it. But I took it home and I read it with a magnifying glass. And I thought, that is rich. And I took it off the fan. So I got this from one of my fans. Okay? Got the idea? And so I printed this up so I could read it. And so I'm going to use these things here right now as a basis for our comments for the next half hour. Okay? And so listen carefully, because there's some great advice here. And what I call it is old-time advice that's still needed today. This goes way, way back. I don't know how many years. Probably at least 60 or 70 years, maybe a lot more. But I know there's some great advice there, and I want to share some of these things with you. I got it in the year 2001 in Logan, Ohio. There's an antique store there, and we just popped in there one day, and I found the old... You believe I gave $2.50 for that? I could have bought an electric fan for that. But I gave $2.50 for that because I just want to get a copy of that thing off the back. So here's what it says. Okay, there are about 10 of them, and I'll go through them pretty quickly and see if you can get some good from our discussion of this. Old-time advice still needed today. And here's what it says. Number one, if you want some advice on how to get along with other people, how to have a good life, here you go. Number one, keep skid chains on your tongue. Always say less than you're thinking. Cultivate a low, persuasive voice. Because how you say it often counts a lot more than what you say. And that's true. It's not just what you say. It's the tone of voice you have when you say this. Now, this is all biblical, and I'll give you book, chapter, and verse for every one of these points. So it's not just pie-in-the-sky philosophy. It's real. It's right out of the Bible. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 1 says, a soft answer, you know that, what's to say? What's a soft answer do? Turns away wrath, right? That's what this thing says, too. A soft answer turns away wrath. And then it says, be swift to hear, and what? Slow to speak. That's a part of it, isn't it? In Colossians chapter 4, in first six verses of that, there's something there that I want to just mention in passing here because of time. But in Colossians 4 and first six verses, the Apostle Paul's giving advice to the church of Colossae, and he says to them, now you've got to remember, he is imprisoned, and he's asking them to pray for him. And he says, pray for me that I might say the right things. Now you'd think he would say, pray for me that I can get out of this stupid jail. But he doesn't do that, does he? He said, pray for me that I can handle my life the way I should handle it. So much of what Paul said was written under adverse conditions. But he wasn't thinking about him. He was thinking about how can I be a better servant of God? How can I better serve my Lord, even when times are hard? He says in Colossians 4, he said, let your speech be seasoned with salt. And make sure the words that you speak are spoken with a gracious disposition. You know, if we have learned to accept the grace of God toward ourselves, it'll be easier for us to go out and speak in a gracious way to other people. If we're sure of our salvation, and we understand the grace of God, it'll be a lot easier for us to show grace toward others too. And why do we put salt on our mashed taters? I don't. I love the taste of potatoes. But my wife eats enough of it for both of us. She puts salt on everything. My dad and mom was that way. My mom and dad would sit down to eat a meal. They salt everything. Even before they checked it to see if it needed it. Some of you do that too, don't you? Get the salt, hand me the salt, honey, and you pour it on before you ever taste it. I just like to taste of plain food for the most part. But that's just me. I'm weird, okay? But why do we do that? Because it makes it taste better. We think so. And Paul said we need to have our words to be very tasteful. Sometimes the way we say it turns people away. It's not what we say. Yeah, let me say it this way. I think the truth has angered some people. But I believe that we have angered a lot more than the truth ever did by our attitude. And you don't have to agree with me on that. That's my observation after 55 years of preaching. But our attitude is sometimes worse than what we say. Okay, that's number one. Can't talk out long on all these. Number two, make promises sparingly and keep them faithfully, no matter what it costs. If you pledge something or you make a promise to somebody, you keep it. And we're not very good at that, are we? It's easy for us to say, yeah, I'll do that. I'll come over and see you. We'll sit down and have it. They're still waiting for you. Don't tell people you're going to do it and then not do it. And we all have to be careful that we can be guilty of that. In Numbers chapter 30 and verse 2, the scripture says, when you make a vow, when you make a promise, you must do everything you said. You've heard people that are as good as their word. That's not very comforting sometimes, is it? You remember when you were at the reunion this past summer with your cousins and aunts and uncles? And I'm not very much up on the social media. I don't know much about that stuff. I don't use it much. But everybody else does, I think. But you told your kinfolk when you got in the car that day and got ready to go home, you said, I'll text you. We'll keep in touch. Or your tweedle-deedle-dee or whatever the other thing is. I don't know what it is. I'll write you. I'll email you. I know what that is. And they're still waiting to hear from you. That was in July. And here we're in October, and you haven't done it yet. The Bible says, keep your word. If you said you'd do it, do it. And don't make a promise you never intend to keep. There's a bunch of folks here today from 36th Street. Up there, during the 26 years that I was there, I suspect they still do, we had what we call willing worker sheets. Most churches have some way of trying to find out what you want to do. And we put it in the computer, and then we make our list to serve and fix funeral food and whatever else it might be from that list. People say, yeah, I'll do that. And then we have guys that have to run all over the church saying, I need somebody to do this, and your name is on the list. No, you better get somebody else. We said we would, and then we don't. That's breaking a vow. Unless there's some bad circumstance. I understand that. I'm not being naive. But we need to keep our word. That's number two. Number three, never let an opportunity to pass by and saying a kind and encouraging thing to or about somebody else. Praise good works that you see done, regardless of who did it. If criticism is needed, criticize helpfully, never spitefully. That's wonderful, isn't it? John the Baptist said that Jesus was the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world, and he must increase, and I must decrease. He was so complimentary, wasn't he? He said, I'm not even worthy to unlatch his shoes. Depending on what translation you're reading from, I'm not worthy to unlatch his shoes. But he gave all the credit and the praise he could to our Lord. What a great person that was. So be careful about being super critical. Sometimes we talk about criticism being constructive criticism. It can be, but it's not usually. It's usually not. Let's be careful how we criticize. Did you know this? I feel in my heart of hearts that you have to earn the right to criticize. You can't just start popping off. Unless you have first established a relationship that gives you the right to do that. Now, see, if I have loved you and treated you right all through the years, and then I have to say, hey, come on over here, we need to have a talk. You're not going to resent that. Because I've already proven to you that I love you. But if I have picked on you or shunned you or just ignored you, and then I say, we need to have a talk, you're not really obligated too much to me, are you? Because I have never proven anything. But if I have earned the right to criticize you, that's a different thing. And I believe that that's inherent right here. And here's something else about that. If you're going to speak good words about somebody and brag on them and help them out, do it now. Do it now. Time just keeps going flying by, doesn't it? And if there's anything that we need to be saying to somebody, we need to say it now. Maybe there's somebody in your life that you need to go to and say, hey, I got to tell you, I'm sorry for what happened. And you know what it was, I don't. But if that's the case, do it now. Today may be the last day you'll ever live. You may never have another opportunity. Do it now. Or maybe there's somebody you need to go to and say, hey, I should have told you this a long, long time ago, but I really love you. You just inspire me so much. Do it now. Don't let this day end. Round them up out here to picnic and tell them. Maybe there's an elderly person in your life. I've found out that there's not near as many elderly people as there used to be. I don't know why. They just disappeared. But, you know, if there's an elderly person in your life that you need to go to and say, hey, I've just watched you for years and you've just inspired me, do it today. And you know, it's tough being a young person today. It really is. And if maybe there's a young person in the church here or your neighbors that you admire and you see good things. Do they know you feel that way? Put your arm on their shoulder and say, hey, I've been watching you and I like what I see. Oh, you have made their day. You have made their week. You may have made their life. But do it today. You remember when Jackie Robinson, the first black ball, pro ball player, came on the scene? A lot of people didn't want him because of his color, because of his nationality. And they jeered him. The first time he stepped onto the field, they jeered him and they put him down. And that just befuddled him so bad. And he had a terrible first game, made a lot of errors, just ruined things. And he stood on the field in a humiliated way while the crowd was putting him down and shouting obscenities to him. But you remember the rest of that story? Pee Wee Reese was the shortstop. He walked over and he put his arm around Jackie Robinson. And the crowd shut up. They stopped their jeering. They stopped their criticism. And he stood there with him on the field and walked off the field with him. Later, Jackie Robinson said, that arm on my shoulder saved my career. Whew. People, we've got a lot to do, haven't we? We've got a lot of catching up to do. Let's get her done, okay? We can do that. All right, here's another one. Be interested in other people. Interested in their pursuits, their welfare, their homes, their families. Make merry with those that rejoice and weep with those that weep. That sounds like Bible, doesn't it? Romans 12. Let everyone you meet, however humble they are, feel that you regard them as one of great importance. Can you imagine how the people must have felt when Jesus showed up at that marriage feast down in Cana of Galilee? Jesus loved to be with the people. He encouraged and he helped. He said in Matthew 19 and verse 14, when people were bringing their little children to Jesus to get a blessing, and his disciples said, hold the children back. You know, the Lord's busy or he's tired. I don't know what all they said, but they put them back. And Jesus, one of the few times, just came down on them pretty hard. And he said, stop it. Don't you forbid these children to come to me. You allow them to come, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. Don't you stop the kids. Listen to me, folks. I've watched this thing all my life. And we, as older people, we don't need to be the brakes of the younger generation. We need to be the steering wheel. Don't try to hush that energy. Don't try to stop that enthusiasm. Just help them to channel it in the right way. Be their best buddy. Help them every way you can. Here's another one. Number five, be cheerful. Be cheerful. Keep the corners of your mouth turned up. Hide your pains and your worries and disappointments under a smile. Laugh at good stories and learn to tell them. Because Proverbs 17 verse 22 says, a merry heart does good like medicine. Do you know that? It's still good for us. Got to let those laughs out. Got to let that joy out. Let it influence other people. It's a good thing to do. Don't try to take the shine off of everybody's life. I had a friend years ago who was very, very hard on people. And as a result, he was very hard on himself. And, you know, some people, you know, you just can't be in worse shape than they are. You know what I'm saying? They've been enjoying ill health for years. And you'll never be any sicker than they are. And if you're sick enough to die, they already did. It's hard to compete with that. It really is. So don't be that way. Let the Lord shine through into your life. Number six, preserve an open mind on all debatable questions. Discuss, but don't argue. It's a mark. Listen, this is on the back of my fan. This old stuff, I'm telling you. I had to squint to get this off here a few days. So you listen. Okay? It is a mark of superior minds to disagree and still be friends. That shows you're a top dog. When you can disagree with somebody but still be in love with them. Isn't that good? That's such good advice that's still needed today. Remember what the Lord said, what God said to his people in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 18? I believe it fits right here. I'm going to use it. God said, come, let us reason together. He didn't say, come on, let's debate the issue. Let's argue about it. God said, let's just talk about it. Boy, I love my Lord for that. I really do. Listen, folks, if God is not the God of the second chance, I've missed it. I really have. If I can't start over, what can I do? What can I do? Where do I go now? My God is the God of the second chance and the third chance and the 50th chance or whatever I need, because he wants me in heaven with him. I'm not competing against God to try to make it to heaven. He's on my side. He sent his son to die on the cross so I could go to heaven. And listen, that same Jesus that was on the cross for my sins to help me to go to heaven is the same Jesus, not a different Jesus, but the same Jesus who will judge me in the last day. And I'm tickled to death about that. I love you. So we don't need to argue. There's no need for that. Let's reason together. We can talk about it. We can talk about it. I had a friend who's a gospel preacher. I'm not even sure where he lives right now. But there was a guy at church where he preached that was always trying to complain and pick a fight with him. He decided one day, I'm going to stop this. And he was going through the lobby, and this guy stepped up and said, hey, preacher,
come in here. I need to talk to you. He knew what it was going to be because it happened before. He said, come here. I need to talk to you. He said, no. He said, what do you mean no? Why? He said, because I don't have to. Just kept on walking. I've been looking for a chance to use that. I think that's a good answer, you know. Hope I never have to, but if I do, I'm ready. I tell you what. Because that's not why I'm here. I'm not here to argue with you. I'm not here to debate with you. Sometimes I go away and preach out of town in meetings like this, you know, or stay in a strange place for a few days. And somebody will come and say, what do you think about all the issues that we have in the church today? You know what my answer is? I'd just like to go one whole year and not have any issues. Think of what we could do if we didn't spend so much time fussing with each other. We can do that. Okay? Number 7. Let your virtues, if you have any, speak for themselves and refuse to talk about other people's vices. Discourage gossip. Make it a rule to say nothing of another person unless it is something good. That'd solve a lot of problems, but that'd save a lot of marriages, save a lot of parent-children relationships, save a lot of relationships down at church between brothers and sisters because somebody said too much. Somebody talked about somebody else, and it got back to them, and it'd be a lot better just to say nothing than to say the wrong things. The Bible's full of that. In Romans chapter 12, especially beginning in verse 9 all the way down through 21, just remember, when I just mentioned to you, you'll remember this passage, because here's where it says that we need to condescend to people of low estate. Get your head out of the clouds and get down where people live. Think like they think. And it said, if your enemy is hungry, what do? Starve him out? No, you feed him. If he's thirsty, you say, he had it coming to him. No, you give him a drink of water. You give him a drink of water. In so doing, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. And I love this. Don't be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. Somebody did you some dirt? Don't do it back. I've had people say that to me different times. They said, boy, he treated me rotten, buddy. And if I ever get a chance... That's wrong. That is so unlike Jesus Christ as anything can be. Don't take vengeance. This passage, this very chapter in Romans 12 says, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says God. Not me. That's up to God. We can do that. Number 8. Be careful of another person's feelings. Wit and humor at the other person's expense are rarely worth the effort and may hurt when you least expect it. Just be careful. Just be careful. I had to point 3 fingers at myself on this one because I am in the public eye a lot with preaching and teaching and entertaining and all these things together. So the more you're in front of people, the easier it is to say or do the wrong thing. And I've done it. And I will recite to you one example. We were in Bellsville, Ohio, and we had just the church there. It was a town of 500 people, and we were having 250 at church on Sunday. It's incredible. Having over 300-350 at Vacation Bible School in a little bitty town. And we were getting ready to move into our new church building. This was on Saturday before our first service in the new building. And we were pumped, I'll tell you. We were so excited. And we had a couple there, Dale and Pearl, their names. And wonderful people. But they took care of her mother. And so because her mother was living with them, they couldn't do much. They couldn't always be at church. They had to take care of her. And they couldn't do the things that everybody else was doing. So it was kind of hard for them. But on Sunday, before we moved into the building, a week earlier, they said to me, as they were going out the door, is there anything we can do to help with the transition from the old church to the new building? I said, yeah. I said, all the pew Bibles in the racks and the songbooks, they all need to be boxed up and taken from the old church uptown out to the country to the new building. I said, they need to be done before next Sunday morning. They said, we can do that. I said, that'll be good. So on Saturday, the following Saturday, before our first service in the new building, I had been out someplace, I don't know where, and I was coming back to the house, and I looked up on the hill where the new church was, and their station wagon was sitting up there, and they were obviously transferring the books. Now, many of you perhaps would have just gone, I lived right there close by, I would have just gone to the house and leave them alone. You know, that's hard for me to do. I just want to be a part of their life. And so I went up, and they were putting books in the rack, you know, so I went in and I started helping them and chatting. And I said to Dale, I said, boy, I said, it's about time you did something right here, Dale. You know, and we just went ahead and put the books in the rack. And then we went ahead and visited. Well, Sunday morning came, first day in the new building, 250 people there, everybody but Dale. And Pearl was there, his wife. And so I said to her as she came out of the building, I said, is Dale taking care of Grandma today? She said, no, she's a whiner, you know, I don't like a whiner. But Pearl said, no, he's not taking care of Grandma. I said, is he sick? And she said, no, he's not sick. I said, what's wrong? She said, well, he said he's not coming back here anymore. I said, what? I said, why? She said, because you said he wasn't doing anything around here. I said, Pearl, you know I was teasing. I was kidding. I was just making conversation. Well, he said he's not coming back. And it broke my heart. I'm telling you, it killed me. I told her, this was on the way out, I told her, I said, you go home and you tell Dale I will be at his house before I eat my lunch. So, Nine and the kids were dropped off at the house. I kept right on going to Dale's house. And I walked up on the porch, and he's sitting in his lazy boy reading the Sunday paper. I pecked on the door. He said, come on in. I stepped inside. I said, Dale, it looks like you and me need to have a talk. He said, what about? Now, that really turned me off right there. When I'm there to try to make amends, don't shut me down. You know, don't pretend like there's no problem, because there is a problem. He said, well, what about? And I said, well, I said, I obviously kept you from being in worship today. He said, oh, gosh, I never thought a thing about it. I said, Dale, I'm here to apologize. I offended you. I didn't mean to. I was just teasing, but I obviously carried it too far. And I'm apologizing to you. Oh, that's okay. So we sat and we chatted for a while. It's over with. And I preached his funeral and her funeral and Grandma's funeral and the whole family. Not that day, you know, but it's about like my funeral that day because I had hurt somebody and I didn't want to do that. But what I'm saying is through our carelessness and overdoing things, we can be offensive. And we don't want to do that. So be careful. Weigh every word. You know, the carpenter's old rule is measure twice and saw once. And that's great advice. Or you end up being like that guy who said, well, I've cut that board off twice and it's still too short. And we don't want that to happen, do we? So be careful about what you do and what you say to other people. You want the Bible? Matthew 7, verse 12. We call it the golden rule. Whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do you even so unto them. It'll work. Number 9, we're about done. Number 9, pay no attention to ill-natured remarks about you. Now, if it's coming to you from somebody else who's getting careless and saying maybe the wrong thing, don't make a big case out of it. Yeah. Dale could have laughed with me when I said it, but he took it seriously. And it backfired on me. But don't you do that. Pay no attention when somebody says nasty things about you. Simply live. Listen to this. Simply live. It's on the back of the fan. Simply live so that nobody will believe them. If they hear something nasty about you, they say, I don't believe that. I know him better than that. You know, don't make a big case out of everything. Disordered nerves and bad digestion, or you might put burnt eggs in there too, can cause a lot of problems. You know, you get up in the morning, your wife says a little something, and you're mad at the world all day long. and we just overreact. You need to consider where the comments are coming from. When somebody says something nasty, just consider the source. There was an old man one time, he was plowing with his mule, and he was just jerking the thunder out of that mule, and with the reins and just beating him around. And somebody saw that. He said, "You know what? Said, you're awful hard on that old mule." He said, "Why don't you just talk to him? Instead of jerking him chained on him, just talk to him." The old farmer said, "You know what? That mule kicked me in the head 15 years ago, and I ain't spoke to him since." That's kind of carrying a little bit too far, probably. You know? But we're that way, aren't we? We get a little something under our color, and we just pout and mope around and make everybody know how bad we are, how nasty we've been treated. It doesn't make any, that's not going to help anything. It just makes you feel worse, and them too. Doesn't work that way. Go back and reconsider Job. When you read the story of Job, you'll see how that he didn't play into that game. And then number 10, don't be too anxious about your dues. Do your work, be patient, and keep your disposition sweet. Forget about yourself, and you'll be rewarded. That's Galatians 6 and verse 9. You shall reap if you don't quit. If you don't faint, if you don't stop, you'll get what's coming to you sooner or later. And by the way, we're not here to get ours if we're following Jesus. Because Jesus said, "I did not come to be served. I came to be a servant." And if we're following Him, we'll have a servant heart. We won't have a selfish heart. We won't be looking to get our just dues. We'll be trying to emulate the example of our Lord. "Do not become weary," He said. One time old Charlie Brown preached some pretty good sermons, didn't he? One time he said to Lucy, he said, "Ain't it so? Isn't it true that we're here to help others?" And she said, "Yeah, that's right, Charlie Brown." He said, "Well, then what's the others here for?" And I think maybe sometimes we see it that way too, don't we? That we're wanting to get more back than what we really need. So these are just bits of advice from a fan of mine. And I hope that you can think about them. And it'll be an inspiration to you. Just go do what it says. It'll work, I'll guarantee you. Thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing you outside and then tonight. Okay, Gary?